from deep inside your radio. Now to play our radio game, Where Are We? Here's Spike and Rachel.
We're in the middle of the desert.
We are in the middle of the desert.
Oh, so close. Oh, my God, kids, so very close. We're actually in the middle of the bayou right near the lake. But thanks for playing our radio game, and we have lovely parting gifts for you. Return tickets to New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, a couple doors closed this week here in New Orleans. We're in New Orleans. The door closed on Spring promptly Thursday evening, and therefore opened on the summer Friday morning. And I don't think there's turning back now. Another door closed, and therefore another one opened this week as the not the last. Ron Paul is still running for president on the Republican side, but the last with the media ever imagined to be a credible candidate. Newt Gingrich announced he was fixing to quit. Not quitting yet, but fixing to quit. You know, quitting takes time. Leaving the race pretty much where a lot of, well, most savvy political observers who don't work for the media, because the media are addicted to and invested in the idea of, this is a tight one. Who knows how this is going to, it's topsy-turvy. As I say, how most savvy observers who didn't or don't work for the media thought it was always going to be, which is rhymes with nominee. What do you think? That simple. That's how the Republicans work. Rhymes with nominee. So here we have now the beginning of the general election campaign. Apparently declared this week by all the participants and all the trusted observers. And so we once again embark on this most awe-inspiring spectacle in the annals of world governance, where two gentlemen, each of whom has had the signal experience, the epiphany, of looking in the bathroom mirror one morning, probably many mornings, and saying to himself, you know who I see in there? I see the President of the United States. That's how special I am. And then spends the next 2 years raising money, eating crap food, going around the country to prove that he's just like one of us. Nothing special. And so, two of them now engaged in a battle to prove to us which one is more like us than the other. And to prove that the other one is scarily not like us. Eat your hearts out. Democracies all over the world. Hello. Welcome to the show. Pocket.
I was young, I could talk about love, but I didn't know a thing. But now I'm grown, and things are not exactly what they seem. The bigger I get, the smarter the world, and the less it all means. My prayers, what I've been feeling. When I was young, I didn't worry about the things I couldn't understand. When I was young, I didn't know anything about hurting and healing. When I was young, guess I didn't believe I'd ever be a man. But now I'm grown, and things are not exactly what they seem. I think about God.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. You know it's summertime here because it's freezing inside. That's right. Temperatures that would have us running for our sweaters in wintertime, we think are, you know, that's a good indoor temperature. It's like, I don't get it. Ladies and gentlemen, not often heard on this broadcast recently, but here today for your listening pleasure, a Los Angeles dog trainer correction. Tupac Shakur image at Coachella is the headline. In the April 17th and April 18th sections of the arts section of that particular newspaper. So they did this twice. Articles about the Coachella Music and Arts Festival referred to the late rapper Tupac Shakur having appeared as a hologram during a performance by Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre. The image, in fact, was two-dimensional and thus not a hologram. Took a while. Figure that out. By the way, didn't they, on a related subject, remember back in 2008, during the election campaign, CNN had this effect during their coverage, which they called a hologram, where somebody in another studio appeared standing next to Wolf Blitzer. Gah. But it was TV. It couldn't be a hologram. Everybody called it a hologram. It was TV, because TV is, as we all know, one-dimensional. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersol Jr. Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban says he wants to be paid for turning his players over to their respective Olympic teams. It's the biggest mistake the NBA makes, he says. If you look up stupid in the dictionary, you see a picture of the USA Dream Team playing for free for corporate America so the U.S. Olympic Committee can make millions of dollars. If you come up with something that you own, he says, then you give it to me for free so I can make millions, billions of dollars. I want it. And it has nothing to do with patriotism, he went on. It's all about money. You don't see the Olympic Committee saying, oh, we made so much money, let's give it to people, unquote. Cuban's statement came in response to Dwayne Wade and Ray Allen saying last week they should get paid if they played in the Olympics. Wade has since backed down from that statement. The outspoken owner, I don't think anybody outspeaks him, whose roster includes Germany's Dirk Nowitzki, says the Olympic Committees and the athletes have turned the Olympics into a money-making venture. So why shouldn't the NBA owners profit as well? I think he's been listening to this broadcast. Nah. Low-income people who live near London's Olympic Stadium may have to move to other parts of the country due to rising rents, according to the mayor of the borough in question. Newham Mayor Robin Wales said a new government policy in the UK limiting rent subsidies means that many people can no longer afford to live in the East London borough that now includes the sprawling Olympic Park, which was built there to spruce up the neighborhood. Newham has long been one of the country's poorest boroughs, but the newly built Olympic Stadium, a large new shopping mall, and public parks have regenerated parts of the borough, causing rents to rise. Wales said he'd written to over 1,000 housing associations in other parts of Britain to ask if they can take in some of the 32,000 low-income families who need somewhere else to live. You're welcome. Speaking of which, visitors to London's Olympic Games can stay in a three-bedroom duplex with a steam room near the city's exclusive Russell Square for $16,000 a week. It's one of more than 30 offerings by a property broker that haven't attracted any takers. Londoners are trying to rent their homes to sports fans during the games for more than three times the typical rate. According to brokers and website listings, with only 92 days left before the opening ceremony, they're struggling to draw guests willing to pay that much. Quote, "We're still waiting for the demand to emerge," says Angela Kelly, who helped set up two Olympic contracts. Maybe there will be a last-minute scramble. About 320,000 visitors will converge on London during the Olympic and Paralympic Games from the end of July to early September, where they'll compete for about 140,000 hotel rooms. Do the math. Homeowners began listing properties for the Olympics as early as 2010, as the recession and biggest government budget cut since World War II led to job losses and falling disposable income. The cost of a typical London hotel room during the Olympics has more than doubled. The city will attract more visitors than previous games in Europe, says a study by Oxford Economics. Londoners sensing a squeeze on accommodation increased rental prices by as much as five times the official typical rates, according to the head of the rental unit at one of the major brokerage houses in London. People offering low-budget alternatives may have more success during the game, she says. The number of journeys on the city's subway, bus, and train network will rise by 25% to 16 million a day during the games. Says one broker of the properties he's put on offer at highly inflated rents, "I've had nothing back. Believe they're going to be a very late rush of people trying to get properties because people aren't sure of what events they're going to get, since London Olympic officials aren't releasing about a million more tickets until early next month. Interest in house and apartment rentals, meantime, during the Olympics at the moment is fairly non-existent," says another broker. And a desperate attempt to stop massive lines at immigration checkpoints, making Britain a laughingstock during the Olympics, is now underway, according to the Telegraph. Immigration bosses have promised that scenes of chaos, which have engulfed both Heathrow and Gatwick airports near London, would not be repeated when the games happen, and are now rehiring retired passport control officers to man checkpoints. They will not be deployed until July, leaving a continuing headache for managers who are under severe pressure to end the lines which have been caused by a lack of staff at checkpoints. The new staff will be paid travel expenses and given hotel accommodation on top of an allowance of up to $30 an hour, meaning the money they save by firing them will be more than compensated for by the cost of hiring them back. They're now facing warnings from business groups that Britain's international reputation faces damage and that investors may be put off by the prospect of waiting up to 3 hours to be allowed into the country. "We cannot say we're open to business and then force visitors to queue for hours to get in," says one spokesperson for business. And by the way, announced today by the BBC, plans by the British military authorities to place surface-to-air missiles on top of residential units near the Olympic Stadium. The Olympics, it's a movement. And you may not be able to move, but we all need one every day. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. This Philadelphia trial that's been going on keeps revealing new and delightful details about what's been going on in at least that diocese. Here are this week's gleanings. An Archdiocese of Philadelphia priest active in schools and scouting was allowed to work in suburban parishes for 5 years after doctors diagnosed him as a pedophile, calling him a very sick man, and told church officials he was a powder keg waiting to... The priest, the powder was just, you know, to keep the shine off. The priest, the Reverend Peter Dunn, paid off one accuser himself and repeatedly resisted or ignored recommendations for therapy, according to internal church records shown this week to a jury in that trial. When the pastor overseeing Dunn in Bucks County in 1990 petitioned archdiocesan officials in a very urgent plea to get the priest some help, they responded by transferring Dunn to a parish 25 miles away. Prosecutors introduced the documents as part of their attempt to show that Monsignor William Lynn, the former Secretary of Clergy, enabled child sex abuse by failing to remove priests suspected or accused of sexual misconduct. Prosecutors say the files on Dunn and other priests suggest Lynn and other church leaders had long recognized the signs and depth of clergy sex abuse, but chose not to act. Lynn's lawyers say he didn't take his position until 1992, 3 years after Dunn was diagnosed as a pedophile. Lynn was also, they noted, the first church official to recommend the priest be removed from the parish ministry, which he was in 1994. Ordained in 1954, Dunn spent nearly three decades around minors. Mission accomplished. And two Roman Catholic archbishops moved a troubled priest to new parishes. Despite dire warnings, he was having sex with minors. Cardinal John Kroll. Oh, that's the same story. Yeah. So it didn't happen twice. It just happened once. I'm one priest. News of the Godly, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, we are number one. Yes, indeed. We, you and me, the United States of America, number one. Recent research from John Schmidt of the Center for Economic Policy Research shows that the United States leads developed countries in the share of workers earning low wages. Take a bow, America. The research also shows that increased wage polarization over the last several decades is one of the reasons for the large share of low-wage work in the United States. The low-wage work is defined as employment earning less than two-thirds of the median wage. In this category, the U.S. leads among developed nations. Ladies and gentlemen, we are number one. And now, as the chair squeaks and the pages rattle, it's time for me to read the trades for you. From Current, the trade magazine of public broadcasting, station programmer asks Corporation for Public Broadcasting Ombudsman to address the Wayne Dyer issue. I'll read it for you. Please give. The issue of spirituality in motivational speaker Wayne Dyer's pledge programming has resurfaced. Who knew that it had desurfaced? In the latest Corporation for Public Broadcasting Ombudsman's column, after the PBS Ombudsman addressed the topic earlier this month. Too many ombudsmen or not enough? The PBS Ombudsman, Michael Gettler, wrote that he sensed that Dyer's programs violate PBS's editorial standards and policies, which require the provision of non-sectarian content. Aaron Pruitt, director of content at Montana PBS, wrote to the Corporation of Public Broadcasting Ombudsman to express concern over the lack of discussion of Dyer's content among public broadcasting programmers or staffers. Quote, "I have been working in public television now for nearly 18 years, wrote Pruitt. "The silence regarding this topic in these otherwise lively discussion groups is deafening." He continues, "It's my opinion that PBS management station programmers and pledge professionals..." Kids, did you know that career existed? Ask your guidance counselor. "And pledge professionals are hoping this blows over and that they can go on merrily airing a program that makes huge money for the system. They do not want to talk about this subject," he wrote. He continues, "I have to believe that there are other general managers and public television professionals who agree that airing these Wayne Dyer programs violates our editorial standards. I think they are just afraid to speak up." Pruitt told the ombudsman he's been concerned over Dyer's content way back since 2004. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting ombudsman, Mr. Kaplan, concludes that, quote, "The use of Wayne Dyer in pledge drives does not appear to violate any rules or regulations. However," he adds, "I do hope the top PBS officials, as well as those running pledge drives throughout the country, will revisit this issue, given the consternation it has caused both to a significant number of viewers and at least one local PBS executive." Dyer's pledge programs have long been at the center of controversy over on-the-air fundraising. Why, way back in 2002, then-PBS President Pat Mitchell raised ire within the public broadcasting system by agreeing with a TV critic that public TV stations broadcast schlock, her word, when appealing for viewer contributions. Susie Orman, we're not looking at you. John Tesh, relax. Please give an adjuration that seems essential, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature in this broadcast.
There's music in the street. There's music in the air. A little old soul beat. And there's dancing everywhere. Well, I would tell the whole world. Tell them if I could. Add a little song to each life. It's been a step and good now. Oh, oh, oh.
A mellow acapella soul beat.
Pardon me, but you could use it. We're gonna make a little music. You got something, don't you lose it. Cause we're gonna make a little music.
This is Le Show from New Orleans, and ladies and gentlemen, now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there seems to be some controversy about the issue of whether the federal government is going to make a profit or not on... the TARP program. So weighing in is the Inspector General for TARP. U.S. taxpayers are unlikely to get all their money back from the $700 billion bailout of the country's stricken banking and automotive sectors. According to the IG's report, the TARP program calmed markets and underpinned the U.S. economy during the crisis. But despite the U.S. Treasury saying last week that TARP would make a profit, the IG's report suggests otherwise, saying it was a misconception. This is a quote, the TARP will make a profit. It says, after 3.5 years, the TARP continues to be an active and significant part of the government's response to the financial crisis. It is a widely held misconception that TARP will make a profit. The most recent cost estimate for TARP is a loss of $60 billion. Taxpayers are still owed $118.5 billion, unquote, the Inspector General. For TARP, it has its own Inspector General. A TARP has its own Inspector General. Next thing you know, a fluffy blanket will have its own inspector. The complexity of the program and repayment calculations has led to widespread debate over whether taxpayers will see a return on TARP. Official estimates of the profit that could be made have ranged from $2 billion to $163 billion over the next decade. But many of the smaller banks rescued during the crisis are still struggling to repay TARP bailout money. More than 700 banks were bailed out. Most of the major ones rushed to repay money in full so they could at least appear to seem to look healthy. But the weak U.S. economic recovery and fragile business confidence have prevented many smaller banks from exiting TARP. And starting next year, banks face an increase in the dividend they pay to the Treasury under TARP, rising from 5 to 9%. 95% of the banks still owing TARP money had missed six or more dividend payments, said the Inspector General. The report emphasizes that TARP is, quote, more than just dollars and cents, being vital to avert financial catastrophe, but it says the rescue, quote, is not without profound long-term consequences. A significant legacy of TARP is increased moral hazard, ladies and gentlemen, and potentially disastrous consequences associated with institutions deemed too big to fail. Moral hazard is the term in the financial fraternity for taking away negative consequences of overly risky behavior so that companies are encouraged to engage in overly risky behavior again. You see. So that's where we're at, according to the Inspector General for TARP. I think the Inspector General for Lawn Chairs is going to issue his report later in the week. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know about the scandal involving Secret Service agents in Cartagena, Colombia. You're welcome. That will elicit an entry in this week's apologies coming up shortly. But some Secret Service agents have already been fired or suspended or shown the door or given their hat and their coat. And this week, the head of the Secret Service, in plain view, oddly enough, announced new, tighter restrictions on Secret Service officials' behavior overseas. They can't take women they don't know to their hotel rooms anymore. I guess they can go to the hotel rooms of women they don't know. And they cannot visit any establishments in the words of the Secret Service official that are not reputable. Reputable establishments, ladies and gentlemen. So I think some interesting new seals of approval are in the offing. But, you know, I have to say, folks, that this just doesn't seem right. It seems defensive, you know? That's not how I want my Secret Service to be. I want them to be proactive and proud. Like this.
By day, I'm ready to take a bullet from my leader.
By night, I'm ready to fight the foreigners who try to overcharge hardworking Americans.
Today's Secret Service, born ready.
I'll sacrifice my life to keep the peace.
But I'll never sacrifice a peace.
Day or night, today's Secret Service, protecting one body, enjoying many. To get in on the action, visit serviceme.gov.
Chamomile tea was a blessing to me and my friend, 'cause she had been cursed to find the best and the worst of all men. And late in the evening we drink tea and sit on her bed, and she'd find the key to the misery locked up in her head. She'd say, oh, they'd love her, they'd leave. They need her the minute she was gone. It was best, it was worst, it was wine, it was cursed, it was ave, ave, ave. From one to another, they'd shower her with laughter and lies, and she'd gladly give in.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, News of the Atom.
Clean, safe, 2G.
friend Addie. The Atom is here.
It's hot already.
Yeah, I know. Your protons are spinning faster.
Protons don't spin.
Okay, sorry. Federal officials investigating the cause of excessive tube wear in replacement steam generators at the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station. You've heard about that on this program. Say there was approval of design changes in the generators before they were put into service. Anything that was installed, all that was reviewed by the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, prior to install, says a spokeswoman for the commission. Yet neither the government nor the plant's operator, Southern California Edison, has made public any evidence that three key changes a nuclear expert claims caused the leak were reviewed by the NRC. This is according to the Voice of Orange County. These changes, including the addition of almost 400 tubes per generator, there's some rubbing, aren't mentioned in official inspection reports provided by the NRC, and so far the agency won't say whether it reviewed and approved those changes before the generators were installed, or whether it has any records that refer to the modifications. There's not an answer for you, said the spokeswoman for the NRC. Because of an ongoing inspection on that right now, you're going to have to wait. The NRC is right now reviewing the design changes to ensure they were properly reviewed and approved. Still, the tubes rubbing is unexplained. Newly released results of nuclide analysis of contamination in fish and shellfish within a 5-kilometer radius of Fukushima Daiichi, the nuclear plant in question, has revealed concentrations of cesium-134 and cesium-137 in excess of Japanese national standards. So I think they're going to have to lower those standards. A nuclear plant in northwestern Japan may be sitting right on top of an active geological fault.
Come on, we don't need the sarcasm.
Yeah, we do. The country's nuclear watchdog says that, raising the risk that the facility may never resume power generation for fear of an earthquake.
Those things don't happen.
They do. For the first time in more than 40 years, Japan faces the prospect of having no nuclear power within weeks after last year's crisis crushed public trust in nuclear power and prevented the restarting of reactors that were shut for regular maintenance. The fault fracture zone under the number one and number two units of the 1,500-megawatt Tsuruga plant could be an active fault that could move jointly with a confirmed nearby active fault, says Japan's Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency. The operator, Japan Atomic Power, see, the abbreviation for Tokyo Electric Power Company is TEPCO, so when I read that this company is called Japan Atomic Power Company, it makes one laugh. The company denies the existence of an active... I just think of the acronym. This denies the existence of an active fault right under the plant, citing its own geological assessment, but the government regulator has ordered an additional investigation following its findings. See, they tie the hands of private industry. Meanwhile, up the coast of California, strange jellyfish-like creatures are swarming a coastal nuclear power plant. The invasion has prompted officials at Diablo Canyon to curtail operations for at least a few days. The plant's operator, PG&E, cut power generation to 25% of capacity at one reactor. The other one was shut down. Workers this week discovered an influx of the creatures called salp, S-A-L-P, clogging screens that are used to keep marine life out of the seawater used as a coolant, often thronging many square miles of ocean in huge gelatinous masses. Salp are tubular, transparent organisms that can be roughly the size of a human thumb. I'm going to be looking at my thumb in a whole new way now. No one knows how many are at the Avila Beach plant or how long they will remain. Well, ask the salp. They know. We'll continue to monitor the intake structure and clean the salp off the screen, says a spokesman. Once they decide to move on, we'll resume full power. That could take several days. Jellyfish swarmed the same plant in 2008, triggering a steep, sudden decrease in power generation. Over the years, they have been a problem at nuclear plants in the United States, Japan, Israel, and Scotland. San Onofre in San Diego County has not had a jellyfish problem. It has the rubbing tubes. See, you don't. No one plant gets all the problems.
Well, that's only fair.
That is fair. San Onofre the aforementioned San Onofre, still ranks the highest in the nation last year for both substantiated and unsubstantiated safety complaints at nuclear plants. More than 7 million people live within 50 miles of the plant. Nothing to worry about.
Nothing even to think about.
All right, then. A government submission to the European Commission, a British government submission, shows that subsidies introduced as part of electricity market reform will not only help renewables, such as wind and solar, but all, quote, low-carbon technology, including nuclear. By failing to single out renewable energies, says the Telegraph, the government is effectively allowing the nuclear industry in Britain to claim subsidies from the taxpayer.
Because it's cheap.
The new system provides a fixed rate for low-carbon electricity so developers can be certain of a return before building an expensive plant. It will be ultimately paid for by households through their bills. The fixed rates are likely to be higher than current bills in order to encourage investments. The agreement between the two parties in the coalition government in Great Britain states that nuclear power stations, new ones, can be built, quote, provided they receive no public subsidy. Huh. Wonder how they're going to get around that. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, back here in the States, recently issued Calvert Cliffs Nuclear Power Plant a non-cited violation of low safety significance after it determined that a non-licensed operator deliberately became inattentive to duty. The NRC completed an investigation in December of the incident last June, confirming the worker deliberately became inattentive in an emergency diesel generator room at the plant. The worker, accredited member of Calvert Cliffs, I don't know where this is in the country, but anyway, Calvert Cliffs Fire Brigade, was lying on the floor with his hard hat and radio removed and his eyes closed, says the NRC report. That sounds suspiciously like sleep.
Could be just a coma.
Could be a coma, you're right. Always fair, Eddie. The employee was not effectively equipped to have responded to the notification of what had been made, and the control room had not been notified of his inability to respond during the time that he was inattentive. It's the word chosen by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Inattentive. I'm just going to become inattentive at this point, ladies and gentlemen. No, here I'm back. And Dateline Limerick, Pennsylvania.
There once was a nuclear plant.
You've heard it. Just about 12 hours after wrapping up the annual meeting to assess the performance of Exelon Nuclear's Limerick generating station, the plant had to shut down one of its nuclear reactors because of an electrical problem. The electrical malfunction caused a temporary loss of power to the plant's main generator cooling pumps, says the communications manager. There was no risk to the public, of course, or injuries, said the spokesperson. The spokesman for the Nuclear Regulatory Agency wrote that our resident inspectors assigned to the Limerick nuclear plant are following up on the SCRAM, that's a shutdown, at Unit 1. Initial indications are that all safety systems functioned. The cause of the shutdown is under review. Preliminarily, it appears to be related to an electrical breaker failure. So these plants that smash atoms to make electricity can be crippled by the lack of electricity. Do you love it?
I do.
Thank you, Eddie. Eddie, ladies and gentlemen. The atom. Clean, cheap, safe, too thing to play. Too ironic to contemplate, really. Our friend, the atom. And now, news from outside the bubble. From the BBC, the former head of Israel's domestic intelligence agency has accused that country's leadership of, quote, misleading, unquote, the public on the merits of a possible military strike on Iran. Yuval Diskin said an attack might speed up any attempt by Iran to obtain a nuclear bomb. The comment follows remarks by other leading figures contradicting the prime minister and defense chief's views on the subject. Iran, of course, denies it seeking nuclear arms, and our own defense secretary has said Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program. Diskin, who stepped down as chief of Shin Bet, the equivalent of our FBI last year, said he had no faith in the current leadership of Benjamin Netanyahu, according to Israeli media reports. I don't believe in a leadership that makes decisions based on messianic feelings. he said. They are misleading the public on the Iran issue. They tell the public if Israel acts, Iran won't have a nuclear bomb. This is misleading. Actually, many experts say that an Israeli attack would accelerate the Iranian nuclear race. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And you know, as I said at the beginning of the broadcast, that Newt Gingrich this week announced that he is preparing to quit the race. He's apparently going to make a public statement about leaving the presidential race, or ending it, or suspending it, or something, or mending it, or rending it on Tuesday of this week. And but for all intents and purposes, Mitt Romney did issue a statement sort of declaring victory in the primary campaign, totally ignoring Ron Paul. I don't get that at all. But anyway, as I say, Newt Gingrich will be making some sort of statement on Tuesday and is probably fixing to rehearse it right about now.
You ready, honey?
Just finishing up the dramatically final paragraph.
I know, dear, but I've got nails at 3.
Okay. All right, it's on the monitor. You got the camera switched on?
You know, I think I just might have. I've learned something from our filmmaking.
Okay. Ready. Profoundly ready.
And go.
You mean action?
Whatever.
17 months ago, I embarked on a remarkably different kind of presidential campaign. A campaign of bold ideas, of radically inventive solutions.
Honey?
Of distinctively visionary...
Honey, cut that paragraph.
But I'm just asserting my transformative historical character.
We know it, and we love it. But it's like saying you were too great to win.
And? All right, don't give me that look. It's cut.
Thank you.
Today, I embark on a new chapter in that journey.
Only books have chapters.
Journeys can have metaphorical chapters. Just will you let me...
Sorry.
A chapter which, in its own way, is remarkably dramatic as well as dramatically remarkable.
Just trying to help.
Today, I am suspending my candidacy for the presidency of the United States and endorsing Mitt Romney for the Republican nomination.
Just a note.
Mm-hmm.
Try not to look so sad when you're saying that.
That was my gravitas look.
That was your sad look.
Okay. But our journey to Tampa is not over. Between now and the convention, I will continue to speak out for bold solutions, although you may not see it on television.
Oh, that comes off as bitter.
Well, it's the truth. Once I'm not a candidate, I'll have to get bitten by another penguin to get any TV coverage.
All right.
We will continue on to Tampa, as I've always pledged, although I meant it differently, because the profoundly important work of writing our party's platform will take place there, because the eyes of the nation will be focused there, and because many of you who have helped this campaign will be hopefully helping us to retire our debt by bringing some of your resources there.
Didn't you have money in the last draft, not resources?
Yeah, I know. It sounded too literal. Mm. I think it was Churchill who said, "We borrow in prose, but we pay back in poetry."
Is that in the speech?
No, that's me talking to you. I'm going to be depending on all of you to join us in making sure Governor Romney centers his campaign around bold solutions, even though he himself may not ever have even envisioned them.
Oh, I thought you were taking that out. It sounds so very petty.
Fine. But then it sounds like I'm saying he has bold solutions.
You're saying you're bringing your brand, bold solutions, to his brand, which is winner.
Okay. But I'm not actually saying that. I mean, I'm literally not calling him a winner.
That's fine. Just remember, you're being Big Newt.
Right. Big Newt.
Big Newt.
Finally, I want to thank all the people who worked so hard in this campaign after the professionals and the insiders and the establishment abandoned us.
No. Just a period after this campaign.
We tried to run a different kind of campaign, and we did. The ideas we persistently showcased live on in Callista's and my books and films. And every time you buy one or more of them, you not only help spread dramatically empowering ideas, you help us pay for this campaign, because we still have many miles to go before Tampa, and many zoos yet to visit.
You're not losing the zoo line?
The campaign kids thought it sounded startlingly self-deprecatory and profoundly cool.
Okay, you want to watch it back?
Hold on, not finished. Remember, we are all joined together in a historically crucial movement to make Barack Obama a one-term president and to build a moon base.
No moon base, Nudie.
Okay. So, what do you think?
I'm so very proud of you.
Thanks.
You're the best little Nudie ever.
No.
Yes, you are. Oops. Late for nails. Kiss, kiss.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A spokesperson for the U.S. State Department claims they've already apologized to Colombia for this month's Cartagena prostitution scandal involving Secret Service agents. Victoria Nuland says U.S. President Obama and Secretary of State Clinton apologized to Colombian officials when we were in Cartagena on the very day the incident was uncovered. But Colombia's ambassador to Washington, Gabriel Silva, demands a stronger apology for the scandal, which he feels has tainted Cartagena's reputation internationally. Quote, the U.S. should apologize further. It is necessary, and I want to hear it from the White House. A more clear expression of remorse is required to protect the reputation of Cartagena, said Silva. He called news coverage of the incident, quote, superficial, sensational, and unfair, unquote. Our news media? Really? You think? Dateline Charlotte, North Carolina. Facebook has apologized for removing photos a local mom said she posted of her 7-year-old son at a Special Olympics event last week. A spokesperson for Facebook said the photos were removed in error. We apologize, said the spokesperson via email, for any inconvenience this may have caused, and we hope she'll repost the photo and continue to share her son's experience at the Special Olympics on Facebook. The email also stated Facebook is a supporter of free expression and proud of the numerous Special Olympics and Down syndrome pages and groups on Facebook. Diana Cornwell uploaded 40 pictures to Facebook of her 7-year-old son who has Down syndrome taking part in the Special Olympics. Soon after that, she got a message from Facebook saying the pictures violate Facebook rules and need to be removed. She says there wasn't anything the least bit offensive in the pictures. One of the NBA's most notorious rule breakers is sorry that he lost control again. Take your meds, Ron. Los Angeles Lakers forward Meta World Peace apologized after decking Oklahoma City Thunder guard James Harden with a elbow to the head during the second quarter of a game last Sunday. World Peace. Never met a World Peace I didn't like. Meta World Peace was assessed a flagrant foul 2 for the play and was immediately ejected. Harden was later diagnosed with a concussion. Ask any NFL player, those don't mean nothing. The Los Angeles Times, so Meta World Peace had a press conference. I got emotional after I dunked. Really excited, he said. It was unfortunate that James had to get hit with an unintentional elbow. I hope he's okay. I apologize to the Thunder and to James Harden. It was such a great game. It seems unfortunate that so much emotion was going on at that time. And now the Lakers public relations official apparently stepped in to prevent him from taking further questions until he takes his Medicaid. Dateline Detroit. A Detroit judge who bragged about a shirtless photo sent to women says he's embarrassed by a, quote, a serious mistake. In a statement, Wayne County Judge Wade McCree apologized to the public. Earlier this week, he admitted to a TV station that he had taken a picture of himself with a cell phone and sent it to women. He said he's naked from the waist up, taking his own picture in front of a mirror. The judge in the picture says, or accompanying the picture, says, no shame to my game. I wonder if he's been watching the Fleece Johnson video. Dateline Taipei, Formosa, state-owned Taiwan power company, Taipower, President Li Ha-shen apologized in person to villagers in Hualien County for conducting a geological exploration project not far from their homes without notifying them or local authorities. Aside from that, he did just fine. Dateline New York, a Danish fashion company has apologized for a T-shirt featuring a 6-pointed star after critics complained it evoked the Star of David that the Nazis forced Jews to wear. The yellow T-shirt, which featured a blue patchwork star in its pocket, appeared on the Urban Outfitters retail website last week. It drew a complaint from the Anti-Defamation League. Wood, the Danish fashion company that designed the shirt, said the star appeared on a prototype of the T-shirt and was removed after concerns were raised. It said Urban Outfitters made an error in displaying the early sample T-shirt. So we're sorry, but we blame them. Which is, they're not the only people to take that approach this week. as you'll see moments from now in the Apologies of the Week still to come. But first, the son of a prominent Denver attorney apologized Thursday to U.S. Senator Mark Pryor for offering up a summer internship in his office without approval from the senator. The internship was successfully bid on by Girls Gone Wild founder Joe Francis. In a letter to Dr. Ken Zucker, Dr. Robert Spitzer made an unprecedented apology to the gay community for his now-repudiated 2001 study that claimed some highly motivated homosexuals could go from gay to straight. And Rupert Murdoch apologized this week for the phone hacking scandal that has tarnished his global media empire, declaring, quote, "the buck stops with me," but then he blamed underlings at News Corporation for keeping him in the dark and trying to keep a lid on evidence of widespread hacking at News of the World.
I'm sorry, I take that back. Excuse me.
No, you're the Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations on NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, whenever you want it, harryshearer.com, kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like finding out what made those tubes rub at San Onofre, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the 60,000 followers at The Harry Shearer. If you go there a little later today, you'll get a link for a sneak preview of a song from my new record about the sorrowful Mr. Murdoch. Don't tell anybody. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.